Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A couple of years ago now, Dan Nelson, director of technology at VELCO, Vermont Electric Power Company, which manages Vermont's electric transmission system, told Vermont Edition about the cyber threats VELCO deals with.
On a daily basis, our firewalls are protecting us from hundreds of, we would term them events or scans or attacks, whether they be port scans or elements that might be packaged into an email, phishing schemes. This is just on a daily basis. This is what our business looks like.
I will admit I was floored when I heard him say that. Hundreds of attempted attacks every day. And that's just the transmission grid. We've heard a lot in recent months about agents of foreign countries trying to access U.S. election information. We know there are major security breaches of all kinds at companies that aim to steal consumer data, credit card and other financial information, or health information. And as more of what we do at the state level migrates to the web, whether it's filing taxes, doing health insurance signups, accessing state services, or renewing driver's licenses, we are leaving ourselves potentially vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. With such an astounding amount of our personal information in the hands of the state of Vermont, how is the state government working to keep it all safe? We are joined today by Vermont's new Chief Information Security Officer, Nicholas Anderson. His job falls within the state's Agency of Digital Services, an agency that was created in early 2017. Nick Anderson, welcome to Vermont Edition. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So that quote from the head of VELCO probably wouldn't have surprised you when he said it in 2017, but that's just one example. What are some of the other threats that you see that face Vermont institutions and Vermont state government every day?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't think it'd be an exaggeration to say that there are a tremendous amount of attacks that our technology, our people, and our processes that we have in place are thwarting on a daily basis, you know, in excess of 4 million over the course of a year just within the state of Vermont.
4 million attacks or 4 million attempted threats.
Well, I think I'd characterize it much in the same way that VELCO did with its events, its scanning activity, and its, you know, potential nefarious attacks.
What is scanning activity?
So I think to provide a real-world analogy for what scanning activity is, it's about the equivalent of walking around from house to house and seeing if you can lift a window that's unlocked or trying to open a door that's unlocked. It's really nothing more than that. It's a digital way of looking out and seeing, you know, what are the potential ways that I can enter a system. Everything that we do from your computer, maintaining a uniform time across your entire company, so everybody's looking at the same exact time of day, or looking at email exchange or how you go out to the web, all communicate over things called ports, which can most easily be translated to kind of windows out to communicate on a network.
And so when you say maybe 4 million events in the state of Vermont, is that just on government services or throughout, you know, private sector, public sector, all kinds of events, you know, my personal computer, et cetera?
That's exclusively limited to state of Vermont assets. You know, there's a tremendous amount of activity that we see, you know, within larger industry, within businesses, you know, within Vermont, external to Vermont, across the U.S., with many different types of attacks every day.
But that 4 million is just on state of Vermont services.
That's correct. And that's really where you see the value of having an integrated agency created in 2017 with the Agency for Digital Services to have that uniform look, not just on providing the IT services, but a uniform look at providing security for the state of Vermont assets as well.
And who are you to be the first Chief Information Security Officer? What's your background?
So I'm recently here in Vermont, so I've been spending the last 7 or 8 years or so around the D.C. metro area, where my last government service role, I was a CIO for Naval Intelligence. I was a senior executive inside the Pentagon. And before that, I had a very similar role where I had both that CIO role and also a senior cyber risk executive type role with Coast Guard Intelligence. And, you know, spent some of my time on, you know, active duty in the military and a couple of years on the industry side now, looking at cybersecurity services and many different facets of commercial industry and government.
You've worked, as you said, in the military and in the private sector. What appealed to you about doing this in Vermont and on the state level?
Well, I think in particular, looking at some of the initiatives and some of the priorities that the administration had put forward and just how they were able to see a vision for how protecting the infrastructure and protecting Vermonters' data, how critical that was to doing things like modernizing the state government and making Vermont more affordable and using, you know, these as opportunities to develop a long-term workforce that would grow the economy, and using these as elements of how, you know, we protect the vulnerable, not only in the real world here in the physical space where we might interact as people, but also in cyberspace.
When it comes to IT and anything sort of internet related, Vermont is not known as being the first out of the gate or the most progressive or the most sort of forward thinking. But it sounds like what you're saying is that the state government's approach to trying to deal with these at least is trying to move forward. How so?
Absolutely. I think it's really just about having people that are committed to the mission and people that are committed to the mission of providing affordable, best of breed services to Vermonters and providing those constituent services and making sure that they're secure. It really just goes all about to the people and their commitment to that mission.
Nick, where are the threats coming from? Those 4 million events, those scans, anything that we're talking about, where is it coming from?
So I think it would be hard to qualify any specific threat here exclusively within the state of Vermont, because a lot of times wherein you see these big attention getting hacks that occur or these cyber attacks that occur, a lot of times it's just collateral damage. You know, you look at big ship transportation, you know, maritime transportation companies like Maersk, moving these big containers full of things coming across the ocean. They were really, really hit very hard with a ransomware attack called NotPetya, a little more than a year ago. That was more than likely not a targeted attack against Maersk. It was collateral damage as a result of that element of malware moving throughout the cyber ecosystem. So to answer a little bit of your question about where are they coming from, it's from all over. It's from private people who are criminals, just like we have criminals in other areas of our lives that are just trying to take control of your machine, to use its processing power to mine cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. Or it could be nefarious state actors, where we see just very recently in the last couple of weeks, the Department of Justice announced indictments against two different Chinese hackers with the Ministry of State Security that had been taking on actions for in excess of really a decade to take things, to exploit the activities of cloud service providers, managed service providers, to not only take advantage of the ability to get U.S. state secrets, but to conduct industrial espionage as well, to steal our commercial secrets.
So when you say that often, you know, you use the example of Maersk, that might be just sort of a random target or might be swept up in an event, and that could happen in the state of Vermont. You talked about those scanning events where they're just looking for an open door, a way to get into the system. And so they're, you know, scanning through Vermont as well as other places, state of Vermont websites, for example, or technology. Nonetheless, that could affect Vermont. Are you seeing any targeted attacks that are specifically aimed at finding vulnerabilities within the state of Vermont?
So I'd say the unique infrastructure that's provided with state and local governments, and you know the unique position we're in, where we're trying to provide robust constituent services in the most efficient way possible. You're right; it leads to more of it being web-based, to being online interactions, to try to make it as efficient and effective as possible. So I think state and local governments as a whole, you know, you can there are organizations like the Multi-State Information Security Analysis Center, or the MSISAC, where they're looking at state and local governments real large. I think we're absolutely seeing actors that are targeting and crafting the types of things they're doing to come after state and local employees. It's absolutely tailored to that sort of environment.
And specifically Vermont in some cases?
In some cases, yep.
Do you have any that you could tell us about?
Well, I think the most common anywhere, whether it's Vermont or whether it's private industry, is email as an attack vector. I mean, you check your Gmail if you or whatever your service provider is like mine. The spam inbox gets pretty full pretty quickly. I'd say absolutely email is the most commonly exploited attack vector anywhere else, but also within the state of Vermont. And people are crafty. It's easy unless you have the opportunity to kind of train your eye for what you're looking at, where they can modify what's called the email header and make it appear that somebody is sending an email to you from inside your own organization.
Right. It's not the you know, hey, I've got $1 million, click this link and give me your bank information. It's like your colleague just, you know, in the office next door, you think you're getting an email from that person.
Correct. Or one of the ones that can be potentially most devastating without a robust educational system to make sure that that's not taken is to exploit position, what's called a position of authority influence operation, where I might say I'm the CEO of a company. Hey, I'm in an important meeting. I really need you to send me our latest, you know, Q3 financial data. Can you send me our profit and loss reports? Can you send me the latest internal report on our R&D efforts? So that's where the state of Vermont, in particular, to counter some of those attempts, has invested in something called SANS Secure the Human Training, and that's widely available. It's free for all of our employees across the state. You know, we've seen nearly 5,000 people in the last year that are state employees that have taken that training alone to try to secure the human element, the element that requires us to think before we act within cyberspace to keep the data that we hold secure.
So this is training. We've gotten it here at VPR, the type of training where you maybe you run through a test where it says, hey, you get an email from Dan Smith. Should you open it? So it's like you have to go through the process of thinking, would I open this? Would I send this information? Could this be a threat? That kind of thing. It's like just training people.
Yeah, it's focused on exactly that, securing the human aspect of our interactions with technology.
When email is, as you said, a really easy, convenient, and often successful way in for people who want to be able to collect our information. Are they specifically targeting state employees to get specific types of information different than they might be trying to get in to VPR or to Global Foundries or to any organization? I mean, is it specific to state government, something specific that they want, or is it just these, you know, these events, as we said, like constant sort of pressure on any system to get any information?
By and large, I think it's the tactics or the techniques and the procedures that these people are using are largely the same no matter what the organization is, whether they just want you and your credit card information as a person, or they're trying to get into VPR, or they're trying to get into, you know, state of Vermont assets. By and large, it's the same. You know, we will see just, you know, just like any other organization will, the occasional what they call a spear phishing attempt, where a phishing attempt is, you know, just that kind of generic attack, you know, I've got this document you need to sign. Can you please click here and enter your credentials to be able to sign it? And some will be maybe specifically crafted for what they determine to be a high-value target or a high-profile individual that they're attempting to compromise and get their information.
Lisa in Brookline emailed in and said, I have been appalled for years at the state tax department's negligence, yes, negligence, in keeping taxpayers' sensitive information safe. They only just stopped using full Social Security numbers as taxpayer IDs 2 years ago, well after many large data breaches at Home Depot, Target, and Yahoo. The implementation was a full year after I'd been told it was in the process of being changed. Their online payment system, ironically, requires full Social Security numbers be entered, even if only attempting to print a blank form. When I called with my concern, the reply was that it was secure. This was shortly after the Equifax breach, and I replied I would never enter my full Social Security number on their system or anywhere else on the internet. Please put the tax department at the top of your priority list and change the online payment system to use the IDs that don't personally identify people. What about that comment, Nick?
So we do actually have a full-time cybersecurity professional that focuses, you know, exclusively on working with tax. So that's good. I can't speak specifically to the use of a Social Security number as an identifier. It's absolutely something I can go and have that conversation about.
Is it a bad idea?
I think it depends. Everything that we do, it's not really, is it a bad idea or is it a good idea? It's a what's the business use case here? You know, a lot of times there are completely valid reasons for needing to use a Social Security number. There have been lots of conversations in the last couple of years about the movement away from a Social Security number to potentially use something other as a randomly issued identifier to get away from using your Social Security number for things that it was never intended for, like opening a, you know, a bank account or, you know, whatever other purpose you might be using it for. So I can't speak specifically to that, but I can say that, you know, we do endeavor to provide every element possible to the systems that we have that are facing the public and the ones that we use exclusively internally to make sure that they're secured in every way possible. You know, with the Equifax breach in particular, they exploited something called the Apache Struts vulnerability that was released at the time. And we have a fairly extensive program that we're rolling out now for vulnerability management across our entire state of Vermont enterprise that scans and looks for exactly those types of things, vulnerabilities across all of our managed assets throughout the state to make sure that they're patched and to make sure they're as secured as possible on a daily basis.
Can you tell me more about that program? What does it do? I mean, it sounds like it's almost like one of those scanning events. It's sort of, it is doing the scanning to try to figure out what vulnerabilities might be there before somebody bad does. Is that sound right?
Correct. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good way of analogizing it. It's a scanning platform that allows us to look at, you know, the entire catalog of vulnerabilities as they're published. You might see them, if you've got a Windows machine or a Mac at home, you see those updates that come across occasionally. It's the same sort of thing. You know, some of those are usability changes, changes in the way it's going to operate. Some of those are security changes. So as soon as those are published, we're able to have those on a unified scanning platform where we then are able to scan the assets, identify a report for what needs to be remediated, what needs to be fixed, and to begin to take action against that.
Is that a new program for the state?
I say it's one that's been being built over the last couple of years. You know, again, this is really one of the successes. I can't underscore it enough that over the course of the last couple of years, with the Agency of Digital Services being stood up, being able to take that enterprise look across the state of Vermont, this is an opportunity that we have to be both more efficient in our services so that individual agencies or departments aren't having to procure the service on their own, and to be more effective by making us more secure.
How much does it cost to do cybersecurity for Vermont?
I would say that we've been incredibly judicious in what we've been going for with as a cybersecurity program, because so many elements of our cybersecurity program have been baked into the way that we've delivered IT services. I'd say it's not a significant investment at all by many standards. You know, we're beginning to make more investments. We've got some brand new initiatives that we're rolling out that are actually significant investments for the state, like the opening up the Vermont Security Operations Center with Norwich University, with NUARI, with Norwich University Applied Research Institute, and that's a significant investment, and that's probably the most significant investment we're making now, and will continue to make for the next several years.
Can you put some dollar figures on these things for me?
Sure. So Secretary Quinn was able to speak to some of this last year as the governor was rolling out his priority initiatives for funding the Vermont SOC. We received an initial appropriation from the legislature in the amount of $600,000 to go forward and not only begin to roll out the Security Operations Center itself as an initiative, but also to look at infrastructure, to look at sensors, to look at training for getting the security staff where they need to be to stand up Vermont SOC operations.
And SOC, again, you said this, but Security Operations Center. And we'll talk more about that. When you say that Vermont has been judicious in how it funds or how much it costs to do cybersecurity, I can't tell if what you're saying is we're really good at being efficient with our money, or what you're sort of quietly saying is Vermont is not spending very much and probably needs to be spending more if we really want to be safe.
I think that we've been able to prioritize the key areas of a security program that needed some immediate investment. As soon as the Agency of Digital Services was stood up, we were able to take that enterprise state of Vermont wide view as to what was really kind of the state of IT in the state of Vermont.
Which wasn't very good, right? I mean, we kept hearing for years that IT infrastructure in Vermont was woefully inadequate, was way behind. I mean, it's not like it's been so great for 10 years and then this agency was created and now it's even better.
Well, I don't have the benefit of the longevity of history to be able to really understand with detail what it was like 10 years ago. But I can tell you that there are some key initiatives that are being undertaken now that, to my understanding, were not initiatives that were previously underway. You know, the procurement of cloud services, you know, rolling out, you know, service providers that have had great success in industry like Salesforce, bringing them to bear to see how the government can take advantage of those and investing in cybersecurity.
Andrew is calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Andrew. What are your thoughts?
When I called on my credit for like LifeLock and did the check review, they said to get on to Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, and you can put a freeze on your own credit cards so nobody can steal your identity and start a new credit on, you know, against your identity. So I thought I'd throw that out there. And it's a little bit off topic, but I thought it was pretty close.
Well, Andrew, thanks for the call. And Nick Anderson, actually, I think you've done this, right? You have frozen your credit. What's the value of that? And how did, then do you relate that to what we as consumers should know about how we operate in this sphere?
Absolutely. So it's, I'd say, Andrew, it's absolutely on topic, you know, protecting yourself, protecting your data, and protecting people's ability to use that either for your benefit or against you, if they have nefarious means to do so, is absolutely on topic. So I have done this. You know, my data has been compromised several times over. You know, the OPM breach that happened with federal employees, that happened. You know, I used to do a lot of travel with Marriott, so that's a new one I get to look forward to with my passport information being there, you know, Experian as well. Freezing your credit really provides you a little less ease of movability if you're trying to get a mortgage, you're trying to buy a new car with credit, you're trying to apply for a credit card. But it's relatively easy when they issue you an access number or a PIN number at the time they freeze your credit. You use that, you can go unlock it and unfreeze it for maybe 7 days at a time, let your creditors run it, and then it locks it again. It prevents people from using your identity. If they do get one of those personal identifiers for you and they pretend to be you with your social security number, prevents them from being able to do so.
And personal identifiers, you mentioned social security number, what else?
So your social security number is obviously a critical piece of information. It can also just be your address, your phone number, your name, trying to piece together those pieces of information. Really where it starts to get a little hairy is if I've got that information, I've got maybe access to your email address, or as I have your username, but I maybe don't have your password. If I can call your bank and piece together enough, you know, elements of your personal life and your personal information to try to impersonate you, to engage in what's called a social engineering attack, where I'm trying to extract information out of somebody by pretending to be someone else or pretending to have a motivation that's not necessarily forthright. That's where it can get particularly hairy if I've got some of your personal information.
Well, Stuart emailed in to ask, does the state of Vermont actively hunt within their own networks looking for intruders who have successfully penetrated and are now roosting on the networks?
So we do respond regularly to, you know, all manner of threats, and we do regularly engage in a lot of information sharing and the partnerships that we're building with both federal partners, state partners, third-party organizations like the MSISAC, the Multi-State Information Security Analysis Center, and our partners at Norwich we mentioned before. So we do regularly perform kind of those health and status checks to make sure that we're taking care of our infrastructure, making sure it's as reliable and resilient as possible.
What information does the state of Vermont have about me, or me being any Vermonter, that I should be concerned about? I mean, certainly DMV records, any healthcare records, tax records. You have a lot of my personal information.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of comes, you know, with the business of providing constituent services. You know, if you're going to go to the DMV and register your vehicle, then they've got some vehicle information for you. Maybe they've got, you know, information about a lien holder against your vehicle. If you're paying your taxes, we've got that information. If you're trying to, you know, obtain information about a tax credit, then maybe we've got a little bit more information. Or if you own a business, we've got even more information. So it does create a pretty clear picture of how a citizen interacts with the state for that purpose of, you know, providing those services.
Sometimes over the years we've heard, as we talk about ways that people interact with the state of Vermont and as more of it goes online, that, for example, it can be difficult for people who say, look, I'm trying to access state services in one department over here and I've put in all of my information and all of that information is in your computer system. And then I go to access a different set of services or to do a different thing within the state. And your systems don't seem to talk to one another. I have to fill out all this information again. It takes forever. And some of what we've talked about in the past is ways to make that more efficient and to have those systems not be siloed, to be talking to each other, to have all of this information in sort of a central place so it can be accessed for whatever it is that you need to do as a citizen within the state. But is there some sense in having everything be siloed and having you have to do that information over and again so that not all of it is in one central vulnerable location?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you looking for a job as a security professional?
Yeah, sure.
We could pull you right in. You've got half of it cracked already. So there are absolutely, for ease of usability, there's an argument to be made for I enter in my information one time and anybody within a business or anybody within the state, if we're talking about a state of Vermont interaction, can access all that information because I've already provided it to the tax department. Why do I need to, again, provide similar information to, say, the Agency of Transportation for whatever reason or to another element of government? Absolutely an argument to be made there. However, in some ways, you might appreciate the security that it introduces by having some of that information segmented, by understanding that, you know, for whatever reason, God forbid, the DMV is compromised or tax is compromised. And I keep mentioning them over and over again because that's a lot of the first places that people think about with their interactions with the state. Having just the information that they needed to have to provide that constituent service is going to allow the remainder of your information to continue to be appropriately segmented and secured, and to make sure when we talk about privacy that the data you're providing is being used exclusively for the purpose you've consented for it to be used.
You've mentioned this partnership with Norwich University and the Security Operations Center, the Cybersecurity Operations Center. How's that working? What is that partnership?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that has been mentioned for a little while, formally now on paper. It was something we kicked off in the month of December. So it's relatively new for us. But with Norwich University, we're able to partner with NORI, with their research institute, to provide a Security Operations Center concept and initiative for the state to look at not only how can we provide for 24/7 monitoring of our networks, of our assets, of the information that people are entrusting us to protect, but how can we also use Norwich as one of the two centers of academic excellence for cybersecurity education here in the state? How can we use them and use this as an opportunity to develop a pipeline of well-trained, you know, cyber workforce members who can, you know, continue to go out to other Vermont businesses if they don't, you know, come and work for the state, hopefully, go out into Vermont businesses and have the opportunity to interact and to make that community stronger, more resilient in terms of their cybersecurity posture? Or do you continue to bring the business here to Vermont where they're looking to take advantage of our cybersecure workforce?
What is the state actually doing? Because Norwich University is already working on cybersecurity issues, which presumably graduates go out and do that kind of work. So how does this benefit the state?
So for the state, it's giving us access both to, you know, the cutting-edge services and the cutting-edge research that Norwich is taking on to provide those types of services, and it allows us to integrate them into the 24/7 operations mechanism we're hoping to have for protecting Vermonters' data.
Nick, part of you taking this job is to figure out what Vermont's vulnerabilities are and address them. And, you know, it wouldn't be much of a job if there were no threats that still needed to be addressed. So what are the things that you think make Vermont most vulnerable that you want to be working on to improve the strength of?
Well, that is an awfully large question. I think the things that make us most vulnerable are just the fact that in cyberspace, unlike here in the real world, in the physical world, there are no geographic boundaries for people to say, well, maybe it's a smaller state, so maybe it's not as much of a target. We're all equally a target in cyberspace and presenting that opportunity to a threat actor. So taking the opportunity to continue to take that holistic look and to continue to take the, you know, Agency of Digital Services approach to looking at Vermont and the state as an enterprise is really what I'm most excited about with this role.
So if we call you up in a year and say, come back, you've been in the job a year, what's going to be your biggest accomplishment?
I think taking that 24/7 monitoring approach to securing Vermonters' data, their assets, and the infrastructure. I think continuing to provide with kind of the complementary capabilities of security and, you know, endeavors in the privacy arena. And I think being able to continue to invest in workforce development to use this as an opportunity not only to secure Vermonters' data in our systems, but to grow that workforce here inside the state of Vermont. I think those are the things I would talk about.
That's Nicholas Anderson, new Chief Information Security Officer for Vermont's Agency of Digital Services. He's been on the job just about exactly a month. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.